Basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup info, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all of your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. All righty, guys. We are live with another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast with Andrew Robinson. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Alexis Davis. And today, we have a super special guest, you know what I'm saying? One of my most, one of my favorite teammates that I've had, man, back in the day at Putnam Science Academy. Current Detroit Pistons wing, New York's finest, Hamidou Diallo, man. Hami, thank you for joining us today, man.
What's going on, man? Appreciate you having me. You know how we rock, man. Appreciate you.
No doubt, man. See, I wasn't sure which way I was going to go with the introduction, man. You know what I'm saying? Because back in the Putnam days, you know what I'm saying, you were probably my biggest headache, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, you've grown and
we don't miss that, bro. You were the one who was at Putnam.
Facts, man. But nah, man, it's been an honor to see, you know, how far you've been able to come, man. Super proud of your growth along the way, man. And shoot, what's it getting ready to be for you, man? Year five, year six? What is it gonna be?
Year five. It's been great. I had a great off season. Spent a lot of time with my fam. And it's been good, man. I didn't get to play preseason this year. I had a little injury, but looking forward to game one. Just getting staying ready so I don't gotta get ready. Trying to stay ready. But yeah, you're following the way. Some big things coming up. Hopefully be able to do special things in Detroit pretty much. But it's been dope. It's been a great season. Can't wait to get started next week.
Sure. Yeah, so being that you grew up in Queens, New York, can you kind of just explain us how it was growing up in the New York basketball scene? Anything, you know, New York has added to your game, giving you that extra, how we kind of see that in the way you play now?
Yeah, I feel like New York, I mean, I feel like a lot of people ask me that, like, I mean, how is it growing up in New York? I mean, people don't understand New York until you really go to New York. So, like, you got to go to New York, be in New York for some time, and just understand the type of grit and grind that the city comes from, and the type of blue-collar people that are in the city as well. I mean, New York is a wealthy city. I mean, very wealthy, but there are a lot of blue-collar families within those cities, within those inner communities. And it's just something different about us. I mean, I just feel like we're brought up different, and we're brought up with a chip on our shoulder. And I feel like New Yorkers are go-getters. Nothing is ever really handed to us. And I feel like that's been the story of our career so far. I mean, just being able to be a go-getter, being able to go chase the dream every night, being able to get better each and every year, and being able to remain focused and remain humble at the same time. But I feel like New York, I mean, it's everything you can imagine in one. So, I mean, it's a beautiful city. I love being from there, but it comes with its pros and its cons. I'm going to say that. Best city in the world, though, by far.
You had to go there. You know what I'm saying? You had to go there. two DMV folks. You know we had to ask Cap.
Best city in the world. Yeah. I'm on the crazy thing about it, my whole staff team, I'm on like a DC team right now.
Yeah, yeah. Troy Weaver, all that. We running things over there, baby.
From the top all the way to the bottom, we're probably DC'd out. We argue about this every day.
Yeah.
DC, people love DC. I commend you guys for that. But you guys are nowhere near. Nowhere near them major cities. Nowhere near. Nowhere near.
This guy's crazy. So you mentioned obviously being a go-getter, man. And I think that, you know, that definitely defines your story, man. Cause I was in the gym when you got your first Division One offer, you and Mamadou, man, from Minnesota and Temple, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, for sure. First high major offer.
Yep, first high major offer, because you had some offers before that. First high major offer, first Power Five offer, and it's crazy because from that point over the next pretty much year, you know, you blossomed into a guy who got his first high major offer to a guy who was a top 20 player in the country, you know, five-star recruit. Like, just talk to me about that process, man, about going from essentially being unknown to, you know, a five-star recruit, from a guy who was getting, you know, low mid-major offers to a guy who had every school in the country, you know, calling your phone.
Yeah, I feel like, so like a lot of people don't even really know like the story, like of me, like going to Putnam, how that came about. So like I was in New York, of course. I played my first 2 years there, and I was an okay basketball player. I wasn't bad. I was like middle of the pack of New York City guard. It was like all these guards. I was like listed ahead of me and whatnot. I mean, I'll always still give them a run for their money, but I never really like received the recognition like for anything I was doing in New York. So, and then I went to Putnam. I mean, I tried out for Putnam. I didn't go to Putnam. I tried out for Putnam. And at first it was like, oh, they didn't really want to take me. It was still like, still up in the air. I was young. I was going into a prep school that only took post-grads, and I was going to be like one of the first undergrads. So Coach Heskell was real hesitant with it, but we came to an agreement like, all right, you're going to come to Putnam, and your first year, you're just going to pretty much just like practice, work out, and pretty much just get ahead of the speed, get ahead of the game, get your body right, and make sure that you're able to play at this level, because it's much more physical. It's like grown men. I'm like maybe like 15 at the time. Everybody's like 19, 20, 21, because it's post-grad. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm cool with it. Mamadou was over there. He did a year. So I'm like, okay, but I'm cool with that. I mean, I'll go over there, be with my bro. And to stay out of New York, I was getting in a lot of trouble and stuff like that. So it was good for my parents to have that relief a little bit that told I was somewhere good and I was doing the right thing, and I was just worried about me and my dream. So boom, that's when I went out. I enrolled in Putnam. I came to Putnam. That's when I met you, your brother, everybody. We enrolled. And then, like, I'm working out with you guys, and I'm like something, I don't know, something just clicked. Like, I belong here. Like, I'm not gonna just be a practice player. Like, I really belong here. I'm really probably one of the best people in the gym. You feel what I'm saying? So, I mean, we working, of course. I mean, me and you, you know, we put the work in at 6 a.m., 5 a.m., night time. I mean, we put the work in, and we was barely sleeping at Putnam. I mean, we both can attest to that. I mean, because we both lived it. We was barely sleeping, Alexis. We was eating Domino's pizza every night. We was living rough, but we both understood, like, that dream that we had. It was nothing that could, like, even throw us off that line that we was on. Like, we had nights where we had, like, a little common area where we would just all sit down and just talk about goals, talk about anything that's going on in the world, we would talk about it. And mind you, we're all sitting in the room. None of us thought we was ever going to play professional basketball. None of us thought we would ever even, I mean, Drew and y'all came in, y'all was known, y'all had offers and stuff, so y'all knew y'all was going to play Division One basketball. But like when I first got there, Division One basketball, I didn't even know what like NC2A clearinghouse was. I didn't know none of that. I'm just a kid from New York hooping. So then, I mean, we start playing, and then now it's come time for everything to get real when coaches start coming in the gym. And as you said, you got the Temple and the Minnesota offer. But I feel like it was just bigger than that, because like being a kid that went from like, all right, you're gonna be a practice player or like a workout person, like not really playing, to starting on a post-grad team my first year, was like a lot of things just changed so quick, but it was all a test to the work. So I feel like everything that come back to it, it just always come back to making sure that you're taking care of your business in the gym. And adversity is always going to hit. Everything is not always going to be a smooth path. So when adversity hit, I mean, that's when you show your true colors. I feel like when you're at your lowest point, when your back is against the wall, nobody's with you, everybody's against you, that's when it shows. Like, that's when the real, that's when I would say the boys get separated from the men. When adversity really hits, like, it dictates it. You show some dictates that you got. I mean, either you're gonna fold or you're gonna get back up and keep trying to fight to the top. So I feel like in my career, my small career, I mean, I've been a pro for 5 years. So my small career, I feel like a lot of times I hit rock bottom, and every time it's just those rock bottom moments is what make the star moments or the great moments of the 30-point, 40-point, 50-point nights feel so much better, because you understand, like, when you're at rock bottom, you there by yourself, man. Ain't nobody really with you down there. So I feel like being at rock bottom, I mean, I feel like that's where I'm most comfortable at.
Right. Now, I think you talked about it a lot, man, just that time at Putnam. And this is me from the outside looking in when I was at Putnam, and just the things, even after I left going to Quinnipiac and being around the team, I feel like when we first got to Putnam, obviously we did the team 6 a.m., you know, we did the practices and stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of times, as far as getting the extra work, like you, when you first got there, that wasn't really your thing. Like, I feel like me and Ace would be in the gym all the time, working and getting in the gym, and it wasn't really too many other people in there. But over the next couple of years, I talked to Espo. I'm like, yo, like, is Jaime in the gym, bro? Is he working on his game? And over the years, man, he told me that you became one of the hardest workers on the team. Like, he told me that you were in there by yourself getting an extra work. You know what I'm saying? And he would kind of develop your own work ethic outside of what we were doing for the team. And obviously, you go to Kentucky, and, like, you have no choice, you know, but to do that. Like, I saw your three-point shot develop, you know, while you were at Kentucky. And obviously now while you're in the league, you're working out all the time in the offseason and getting in the gym. And I see you post with Chris Brickley and all that kind of stuff. Like, just talk to me about that progression from, like, when you first came to the school, your head spinning. Because and this is the first time I probably ever told you this, bro. One of the things that I always admired about you, bro, was, like, I feel like that first year for me, I've always been a guy who had to, like, you know, being a shooter, bro, my routine is sacred. But I had to go in the gym and shoot a certain amount of shots every single day. Like, yeah, that was me. And one thing that I always envied about you and Josh Wallace, bro, I felt like y'all two could come in the game. Like, we would have practice one day. I wanted to be y'all to practice the next day, and y'all would have 20, bro. And I'd be like, cuz, I'm in the gym shooting 500 shots, getting up at 6 a.m., and these dudes coming out raw talent. It just hooping, bro. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was always like, yo, like, how is this dude doing this? Sheer willpower, bro. You know what I'm saying?
He was a hooper. Like, he ain't work out. He ain't do nothing. That's why God said to this day, he know he didn't work out.
At all, hooper. You know what I'm saying?
As far as the working out thing, like, you and Aaron, when y'all first came to put them, like, the way y'all work, I knew y'all was, like, working towards something. Y'all wasn't just, like, y'all didn't come to put them and just come to put them. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, a lot of people, like, they go places now just to say that they're there. Like, oh, I went here. Like, I seen, like, you and Aaron, like, y'all was on a whole different mission. Like, all right, they say I can't do this. They say I can't dribble. They say I'm just a shooter. Like, y'all was in the gym. So it's like, when I see that, I'm like, hold on. Like, that's A in the gym now. I can't. That, like, my competitiveness in me couldn't allow me to see you and Aaron just the only people in the gym morning after morning after morning after morning. And you know, our dorm was right upstairs. So when somebody in the gym, you're going to know they're in the gym.
Right.
So you feel what I'm saying? So, like, the competitiveness in me was like, I can't allow that to happen. That's when I started joining you and Aaron. And then that's when I feel like it just became bigger and bigger. The Keelan started coming. Now Malibu started coming. And then, but I feel like as far as the work ethic, like, you guys installed that in the Putnam, like, without a question, it was a big difference between the way you guys were working out and the way everybody else was working out. And that just shows, like, the different situations that everybody came from. Like, you guys sacrificed something.
Right.
To Putnam, but not everybody valued that sacrifice that person. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you, well, you had Division I offers, and you decided to come back to make sure that little bro was good and take care of him and make sure that y'all do this whole path together. Because I remember the whole time they recruited you. You like, man, I can just go to school. I don't even really gotta come, but I can just come hoop, chill with my bro. We gonna just do it together. And I feel like the whole work ethic, y'all just installed in there, and from there it just took off. And come January, February, you just seen everybody in the gym. And that's what made us so successful, and I feel like so connected as brothers more than as teammates. Like, we could lose a game and we wouldn't be worried. We could have a fighting practice, we wouldn't be worried, because everybody was so connected, and it was like nights we didn't even sleep. Like literally, we would be sitting there, and then it would be 3 in the morning, take a little cat nap, and then we just in the lab. It's like, and I feel like those are the days that you cherish, because those are the days where it's like, I feel like I didn't value those days enough to live in that moment. If you feel what I'm saying, like,
yeah,
even like my time at Kentucky, like I just went back to Kentucky for Midnight Madness last night. Like, I'm just looking around, like, damn, like I really didn't value the values that that school really had for me. I was so worried about being the next chapter, making it to the league, being, and I didn't really value that. Which I feel like everybody is guilty to that, because at the end of the day, we all play the game, like, make it to the league and take care of our families and X, Y, and Z. So that's always going to be the motivation and the drive. When you really get there and then you really sit back, it's a lot of things that I took for granted that I wish like I had today. Like a lot of things that I wish that I had on the planet for me today. Like I was at Kentucky, like best school in the world. I still believe that. I mean, everything that we do in the league is the same thing like how we're doing at Kentucky. But it's like you wake up, I got a chef for me, he cooked me breakfast. I just tell him what I want in the omelet, boom, get to class, work out, come back, he make me lunch again. Then practice, dinner, chef's still there, he making dinner. It's like, now it's like, stuff, just like a little thing like that. Now it's like, I got to worry about that. I got to get my own chef now. Now I got to make sure that my chef is on his P's and Q's, because if he throw off one little mistake, it's like my whole day is thrown off, my whole routine is thrown off. So just little things like that that they have set up for us that at the moment it's like, oh, this is what's supposed to be done. Then when you start making a little bit of money, you start getting some money. Nothing is taken care of for you. You have to put those values into yourself or you won't have it. So I feel like, yeah, of course, the team still has a chef. The Detroit Pistons has a chef and stuff. But like you say, and like you showed, to be one of those greats, you got to always go above and beyond, especially when it's about your craft or when it's about taking care of your body or anything like that. You always have to go above and beyond. And that's something that little do you know, like I learned from you now. I mean, yeah, you and Aaron, it's like the way you got it, we didn't have nothing at home. We didn't have no trainer, we didn't have food, we barely ate something, like we barely had hot water. Like we got some stories. We got some real stories.
Stories, for real.
I'm saying that for the documentary. But it's like it was like some real life events that was happening, and everybody there didn't let anything waver them. I don't know if like today's generation can do that. I don't know if you could tell the top 10 player in the country, like, yo, go to this school in the suburbs, small town, 4,000 people, one supermarket, one pizza shop, one Chinese restaurant. You might have hot water in the morning, you might not. You might have bed bugs, you might not. You feel what I'm saying? Like, this is real life events that we was living in that, I mean, we cherished it. It was an experience for us. And like, I just went back to putting them in me, just being there and seeing it. And I got like a funny story. We playing pickup, and one of the young boys on the sideline, he just started like melting off a little bit. Cause I was like, I'm cooling. Like, we playing pickup, I'm not finna take them serious. He just started melting off. So like, I started really hooping. Like, I run off like 5 in a row. And I look at him like, bro, you crazy. Like, I really built this, bro. Like,
right.
Like, don't ever try to disrespect. And mind you, though, like, I still talk to him after. Like, I like his mentality, because that's the same thing I would have done, man.
Facts.
Scoochie Smith, anybody else would have came to the gym. Of course, I'm going to test you. And you better show me that this is what it is. If not, then I'm going to feel like it's not that. So. Just like the love over there is still dope. It's still dope. The city of Putnam is still dope. Bro.
Man, I remember that. I seen it in person when we played Brewster for the first time, and you and Donovan was going at it. I remember that. Like, it was like, yeah, like you top 20. Yeah, I'm here.
Right, so they put us in our mouth for that first game. We were not ready for them.
Nah, yeah.
We were not ready for them.
The crazy thing is, though, we almost won that game. I don't know if you remember, bro. It was a close game until the end, and they ended up pulling away.
Yeah, they started going crazy at the end. I think Mamba might have got in foul trouble, and we had no bigs.
Facts.
It was a close game, though. We was winning that. We was winning for a little bit.
Facts.
And that was the first time they really ever felt like anybody, because they was just running to the left side.
Right.
And Adams got a couple other guys. They were running through the left side. But nah, yeah, those were the times, bro. Those were the times.
You kind of talked about all the decision making and like the sacrifices that go into playing the game is more than just, you know, just showing up. And you kind of were faced with a big decision to reclass and go to Kentucky. Can you kind of talk about that decision and what, you know, what kind of made you feel like, okay, this is the right thing for me to do the next move in my career?
Yeah, I feel like just being honest, I mean, just, I felt like I wasn't being challenged no more. I put on, like, I felt like the competition, it wasn't challenging for me. And I felt like I was coasting every day. I felt like I knew what I could do. Like, I didn't have the same drive that I felt like I already knew what school I wanted to go to. I knew once Calipari offered me, I knew I was going there. It was just a matter of Kentucky actually really wanting me and actually really making me a vocal point of that team that I was going to be a part. And if that was going to get done, there was no other school that pretty much stood a chance for me. Because once I seen the presentation, and once my dad seen the presentation, he's like, there's no way you're not going there. He seen Cal pulled up a little book. Like, yeah, I did $1 billion in NBA contracts. My dad really needed to hear nothing else after that, pretty much. I mean, but I just feel like that decision it was just not competitive enough for me no more in high school. I feel like everything was just so easy. I mean, so I wanted to go to Kentucky and I wanted to experience that. So when the opportunity presented itself and Cal was like, yeah, I mean, we would love to have you on campus early. I was like, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Why wouldn't I go learn from De'Aaron Fox and my band who I just seen last night too? Isaiah Briscoe, and just sit there and learn from them. And I could play if I want to as well. So like, it was a time when I went there where he was actually really thinking about me playing. And now that I like sit back at it, I should have actually played. Like, I felt like I should have played. And maybe I would have left that year, maybe I wouldn't have, but I feel like I just still should play to just get that experience with them and just be able to take the floor with that many great players and just at that young age being tossed into that environment with all the obstacles against me and see like where I was stacked up and see what would happen. But I didn't play, and I went and I tested the waters for the draft, and I had a great draft process, and I just ultimately chose to just come back. And I felt like I could have left, and I felt like I could have been a first rounder. I like strongly believe if I would have went in the draft that year, I would have been a first rounder for sure. I mean, there was just so many teams, and I was like the mystery of the draft, quote unquote. And I feel like I would have been a first rounder, but I feel like my whole situation in the league would have just been so much different because I don't feel like I was fully ready. So like that's the main reason why I went back to Kentucky, because I didn't feel like I was ready, and I didn't want to really play in the G League much. And I knew if I would have did that, I would have played in the G League a lot just because I was so young. Nobody had seen me play for a year, or maybe not, because the league, now being in the league for so long, I feel like the league is all about hype, and it's all about how you come in, and it's all about what you run with. So you can come in and you can be that mystery player, and you come in and you play good basketball, that wave just going to keep going, and it's never going to stop until God stops it one day. So yeah, then I went back and I played, and I feel like I had a okay year. Of course, I had some adversity. I had some times where I was probably the worst player on the team at times, and that just comes back to somebody that was at Kentucky, Coach Kenny Payne. I mean, I just talked to him day after day, day in and day out, and he was just always just telling me, like, they're not going to give it to you. They're not going to give you nothing. So either you're going to work, or you're just going to sit down and be mad about it, but nothing that you want is going to be handed to you. So, I mean, he was like a father figure for me on campus. Like, through my dark moments, through my dark times, through the whole university turning against me because I was playing bad games, like, I couldn't even go on social media. Sometimes I didn't even want to walk around campus. That's how real it was. I mean, and that's why I say Kentucky's like the league. It's like the fans are so attached to basketball. It's like I played five bad games. I was like the second highest recruit to come on campus. I played five bad games. They was like, why is this guy playing? Why is he on the court? Cal sitting down. He doesn't belong here.
So we got to rewind a little bit, man. I mean, skinny kid, left Rack City, New York, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get your hand, I mean, excuse me, you get your name called, man, NBA draft. Like, walk me through what that experience was like, what that moment was like hearing your name called, just what that day was like. What do you remember about it, man? Because, again, for me, like, just seeing when I first met you and where you were and seeing all of that culminate with you hearing your name called in the NBA draft, bro, I felt like I got drafted that day. I was like, yo, like, that's crazy. Like, man, we made it. You feel me? Like,
yeah.
You just talk to me about what that day was like, man. What that moment was like for you. Just, you know, having all your work over the years culminate in and hearing your name called on draft night.
Yeah, so I feel like when I was at Kentucky, I mean, as soon as I got there, I couldn't stop thinking about being drafted. So I feel like it wasn't the way that I always envisioned it. That's not how it occurred. Like, I envisioned being invited to the green room, having my whole family with me at the green room, having my own table, having all of that luxury stuff, but it wasn't like that. So, I mean, I'm a New York kid, so it's usually when you're not invited to the green room, you're not going to the draft for real. And I just remember the whole day was like a blur, and everything was happening so fast. Everything was happening so fast. So now I'm sitting there, I mean, 44 picks go by before I hear my name called. So it was a long time. I was probably sitting there for like 3.5, 4 hours. Just sitting there seeing all the players get their name called, texting my agent. I remember even texting my agent when like a couple of teams that said they was gonna take me at this number if I was there, passing on me. I was just texting my agent back and forth. And as the picks got higher, I just kept getting madder and madder and madder and madder. And then I finally got my name called at 8:45. Howard Diallo, drafted by the Brooklyn Nets. And I'm sitting next to my mom. I just remember my mom shedding a tear. And I just remember hugging her. Like everything that I was thinking about of even being a second round and stuff just went out the door once I heard my name called. And my whole family was sitting around me. I just hugged everyone. And then I remember whispering to my brother's ear, like, don't worry, I'm going to make everybody pay. And then me just saying that was just like sort of a way of me reminding myself, like, nah, I mean, we got drafted, but there's still a lot of work to do. Like, we got nothing guaranteed. We don't got no contract. We could go play summer league. We could get cut. We just got our name called, but you know, when you're second round, you don't have a lot of roster spot, you don't have a lot of contract, nothing, pretty much. So when I did the interview, I interviewed and stuff, and being a kid from New York, I mean, the whole city literally was behind me no matter what pick I went. So, I mean, of course, I had a great time in the city. It was, my whole neighborhood was out, literally everybody. So I had a good time. And then it was time to get ready for summer league, but I couldn't even practice. So, mind you, I got drafted, then I got traded twice. So, I took practice until the trade went through. And the trade couldn't go through until the NBA free agency started. The NBA free agency started right before summer league. So, from June to, like, July, like 2-3 week period, I didn't practice at all with the team. I was just there working up on myself, but I didn't get to practice because I was technically not on the team yet. I think I was waiting for Dwight Howard to clear waivers. So I was in practice, and so like the day before my first summer league game, all the way it was clear. They were like, all right, you're gonna be clear to play. I'm like, what? I didn't practice, I didn't do nothing. Like, I remember like being in the hotel, they're like, is he gonna play? Is he not gonna play? Is he gonna play? Is he not gonna play? I remember saying press with the GM Oklahoma, like calling the league, trying to figure out like is he gonna play, is he not gonna play? And then I finally got clear like 1 hour before it tip. I'm like, I'm playing. So there's no way I'm not playing. So I played the first game, I played well. Then the second game, I killed the second game. And now the third game, I killed again. And then I remember that's when like I agreed with a contract with Oklahoma City. And that's when everything felt real for me. Like, that's when I'm like, okay. Like,
that pen to paper.
Yeah, pen and paper, like I know this is this. Like I actually signed a contract now, so like, okay, now I can relax a little bit now to figure out how to get my mom a house, because I mean, that was always like my goal, no matter what, before anything happened, that had to be done. So my first purchase was that. I had to get my mom a house, moved about to Frank City. And then from there, the work just started. But I remember that night, I mean, it didn't go the way that I expected it to go at all. But when I look back at it, of course, it was a great night.
So once you're there and, you know, you're playing with OKC, you know, you're playing with guys that you were just watching on TV, Westbrook, Paul George, kind of talk to us about getting there, being able to play with these guys, learn for them, you know, gelling with them, that whole experience.
Yeah. So I feel like from day one, I mean, Russell's my vet. So from day one, I feel like, I don't know, I felt like I belonged. Like, I wasn't that much amazed. I wasn't that much like that. I was just watching Russ, PG, and all these guys for the last 10 years. And it was none of that for me. I was just like, I want to see, like, where I line up with them. I want to see, like, can I compete? What is it going to look like? Can I even get minutes? Because Bobby Beck, I get drafted again second round. Usually, you're in the G League the whole year. I'm drafted to a playoff team. They got 8 solid rotation guys. There's no way in hell I'm getting a minute on the court. So I'm just like, let me see where I line up with these guys. And mind you, Russ being my vet, of course, I'm bouncing things off and I'm learning from him every day. I mean, probably one of the best people, I mean, ever, just by taking me in, taking me under the wing, showing me the ropes, and just always just being genuine and showing me love. Like, I could never not do that for the next generation just because it was done for me when I got there. So like, even like rookies and stuff now, like when they come in, I'm always showing love because I know how much that means to a rookie coming in. Like to have somebody that is there for you, to have somebody that you would call a big brother, to have somebody that when you're on the road, take you get a steak and you don't got to worry about nothing. Money ain't really coming in yet. You feel what I'm saying? So to that made it very, very easy for me. Russ has made it way easier for me to be in my bet. And being the player that he is, of course, everybody was just so amazed. So everybody would be like starstruck a little bit, but like I just put my head down and just try to work because I felt like I belonged. I don't know. I felt like everywhere I went, I felt like I belonged. And I felt like I had to prove something. So I just never really took my head off the goal. And the goal was to always just not just be in the NBA, but to actually play in the NBA and make an impact in the NBA. So it's still the same goal and still just the same mentality for real. I mean, there's always going to be doubts, there's always going to be haters, and there's always going to be people that think that you don't belong and think that they're better than this is that. But you just always just got to put your head down and just work. I feel like no matter what you do, if you put in the work, everything else will take care of itself. So.
Now, I mean, based on your response, that made me think, like, obviously right now, you know, Russell Westbrook is in the center of media attention. Everybody's talking about, you know, is he fitting with the Lakers? People have tried to question if he's a good teammate, this and that. And obviously, after he left OKC and Houston, he came to the Wizards, you know, my hometown team. So I got to watch him, you know, and become a Westbrook fan while he was here in D.C. And everything that I heard about Russell Westbrook, man, is that, like, he's an incredible teammate, like, incredible person, you know what I'm saying? And it's crazy, like, just the slack that he gets in the media all the time, always under a microscope. From your time being his teammate, like, what can you say just about, you know, what he's like as a person, what he's like in the locker room, and just what it was like playing with him, you know, and just what's it like for you now, just hearing everybody, like, trying to throw dirt on his name and, like, essentially try to blame him for the Lakers situation last year. Like, you know, for you, a guy that shared the floor with him, shared locker room with him, like, you know, what's your take on just Russell Westbrook?
I feel like, let me see how I could word this. I feel like as a person, right, it's like, if I take myself back and I had to, like, choose between every person that has ever played the game before, like, who do you want to be a vet? Like, of course, your first people, you're not going to choose like Russ. You're going to choose like the Kobe's, the Bron's, the Jordans, stuff like that. But now that I actually experienced it, I wouldn't want nobody else to be my vet. I mean, like, when I came in, the type of love and the type of like brothership and the type of friendship that he just showed from like day one to me, like just teaching me the ropes, teaching me like, nah, young fella, like you gotta be the first one in the gym, you gotta earn everything that you're getting, like making sure that I'm good on the road, whether if it's like I said, taking me to dinner, taking me out. Well, no matter what it was that you could think of, like no matter what it was that you could think of, I was taken care of. Like I didn't have to worry about it. It was like I'm with my family from day one. So like for me to have a person like that come in the league and I see stuff going on the internet, I can't do nothing but laugh because the real will know. The real will know and the real will understand. So like I feel like on the rest thing, I mean, that'll always be my big brother no matter what occurs, just because of the love that he showed to me. He didn't have to show to me. Like you know, he didn't have to show me love. He didn't have to make sure that I was good. He didn't have to teach me the ropes. He didn't have to give me the advice that he was giving me. You don't have to do that. I mean, he could have just been a vet. That's a normal vet, but he took it above and beyond. I always have the utmost respect for him for that. I mean, as far as the media go, I'm just let the media be the media. I ain't really going to get into all of that. I could just speak on what I know, and what I know he's still doing still to this day. I don't think he ever changed who he is as a person. I can't see that.
So the NBA, like, it can be real serious. It's time to handle business. Sometimes it's time to have fun. But luckily for you, you got to have some fun. All-star game, slam dunk competition, all of that. Can you kind of talk to us just about getting there, competing, being around greats, ultimately winning, you know, everything that goes into just all-star weekend? It's not just that one event, but just the whole experience. And then topping it off, kind of cherry on top with winning, just how that can kind of be versus how, you know, you have all those serious experiences. But now it's like all-star, you get to let lose, you get to have fun, you know, show what you do, you know, when you're not doing those drills, you're having fun, you know, just showing off. So like how was that for you?
I feel like it was great. My all-star weekend was in Charlotte. I got to meet so many people that I just like grew up watching, and so many people was just so accessible during that weekend. It was just like all mind-boggling. And being able to win the dunk contest, I mean, I was so nervous to even enter it. And in fact, it was like, of course I knew I could jump, and of course I knew I had bounce, and of course I knew I belonged, but I just felt like it was just so many obstacles there that like anything could go wrong. And shout out to Chuck from Team Flight Brothers. I feel like he helped me with like my whole dunk rollout, and he made sure that like, nah, do the windmill first, then you do Shaq, then you're gonna win the whole crowd over. And then after that, you're gonna get two easy dunks. So it's like the whole rollout, he just helped me with it and made it so easy for me. But I feel like, I mean, I got one of the most legendary dunks in dunk contest history. I mean, that speaks for itself. I mean, being able to jump over Shaq and then pull up Superman on him. It went over a lot of people there, like Superman on Superman, but it was just dope. And then the type of love that I received after, and the type of recognition that I received after throughout the rest of the weekend was just so much different. It was just so much more love. But like I said, it was a great experience. I'm looking forward to do it again one day, hopefully somewhere on the East Coast, though, maybe New York, something like that.
So was the plan always to jump over Shaq? Did you go into the night knowing you were going to jump over Shaq, or was that like something you kind of picked up while you was kind of scanning the crowd, thinking about what don't you going to do next? Like, you know, ooh, like how did that go down?
Think about scanning the crowd and grabbing Shaq. that was definitely planned out. What?
And did Shaq know? Did Shaq know you were going to do that?
Yeah. He knew it was a possibility. He just didn't know if I could do it or not. Like, his words to me, right. He was like, make sure you clear me, young fella.
Right.
So it was like, I knew I had it in my back pocket, but I was going to go last at first. And then my coach was like, nah, do it in the first round. I'm telling you, do it in the first round. I'm like, nah, I want to do it last. He said, you might not make it there. Do it in the first round.
Right.
I'm like, all right, that's so the first time I did the windmill with Russ in the past. Yeah. And I feel like that's when I just won right there. It's crazy though. And my last thing, I was gonna do D Wade. I was gonna jump over D Wade, but Dennis Smith did D Wade before me because he was jumping before me. So he was missing a couple, and he just grabbed D Wade because D Wade had the bug. It was his last year and stuff like that. So he just grabbed D Wade. But I wanted to grab D Wade because, of course, my dog was my favorite player. So it would have meant a lot for me. So I had to substitute D Wade, and I ended up doing it. I was going to do with D Wade. I did it with Quavo. So that was random. I just asked Quavo to be in the dunk. That was random.
Okay. Yeah.
It was dope.
I know that was probably a lot because I just watched his episode with Drink Champs, and everything he says, it kind of hits you right here. So you're like, I got to make sure I really clear him. So I just think he's going to be the best dunk. Just get rid of my career.
Make sure you clear me, young fella. I'm like, boy, I'm going to clear you for my own look in front of 30,000.
Thanks.
So being that you did do the slam dunk comp, was there anything else that was like during All-Star Week that you feel like maybe like someone that you met or like a conversation that you had or just anything else that might have happened during that weekend?
I feel like I met so many people that everybody could really think of, like I had a conversation with, like literally, it was like everybody was like right there just in such a distance. And then I became the kid who won the dunk contest. So it was like everybody wanted to talk to me. Everybody wanted to take pics with me. So it was like, it was a different feeling. And I was just talking to one of my old staff members at Kentucky. He was asking me if I still got the jersey winning the dunk contest. And it's crazy, I still got the jersey in my basement. And it's like, one day I decided to look at it because it still got all the rips in it and all that type of stuff too.
All right. So, I mean, I want to ask you about this, man, because one of the things that I've kind of just noticed is listening and stuff like that, you know, one of the hardest things is not making it to the NBA. Honestly, the hardest thing is staying in the NBA and making it to that second contract. Like, sometimes players celebrate getting their second contract more than they do, you know, getting drafted, because it signifies like, all right, like, you know, people want me to stay here and things like that. For you, being a second round pick, you know, being a guy who had to get out the mud, you know, what was it like for you navigating free agency for the first time and then eventually being able to secure your second contract, you know, with the Pistons? Just walk me through that whole process, what your mindset was, and then what that experience was like for you ultimately getting it done.
I feel like it's like thinking of an NBA draft, right? It's like that on steroids. Because like you said, I feel like it's like the hardest thing to do is stay in the NBA. I mean, we all know that. So it's like you're fighting to stay in the NBA. You're talking to different teams, interviewing with different teams again. You're trying to figure out where you're going to be. And I'm just fortunate that I was able to stay, I mean, in the city that traded for me. And I feel like the city of Detroit, I mean, it's just a great city for me. Like when you talk about who I am as a person and what's my background as a person, I feel like the city of Detroit is the closest thing, if it's not New York City, for me. I feel like from the people, from it being people, like us, from it being just so much of a loving, caring town. Like the city gonna be behind you no matter what it is. If you're taking care of the city gonna be behind you. And I feel like it's the same thing with New York City. And being a kid from New York, I come up from the grit, the grind, fast pace, a bunch of things going on. And the city of Detroit is a little bit similar. I mean, it's the grit, the grind, it's the Motor City Cruise, it's like, they really come from that. I mean, and all the great Pistons teams, they really had that. So I feel like just right now, I mean, my home here in Detroit, I mean, I feel like I'm good where I'm at. I mean, I love the city. I love the team. I love the coaches. And we're just working. We're trying to achieve something, which is trying to bring back that type of basketball, bring back that type of swag, bring back that type of environment for the city. I mean, which is hard because it wasn't here for a long time, but I feel like we got a great group of guys. Like we got a bunch of guys with a lot of different personalities, and with just speaking on mine, I mean, just having that background and just having that type of swag and that type of influence to the youth, I feel like that's what this city is all about. So I feel like it was just a no-brainer to come back. For
You mentioned, you know, you kind of feel like y'all basically have the keys, you know, working together, figuring everybody out. So now it's like, okay, as far as you go, of course it is a team, but you personally, what are some of your goals for the season? Of course, you know, to win at the end finals, but leading up, you know, might be some personal things on the side. What are some of your goals for this season?
Just to keep getting better. I feel like to keep getting better each and every year. I mean, like Drew said, I mean, it's hard to stay. So every year, just keep trying to get a little better, keep trying to improve, and just trying to show my coaches and my teammates that I'm a better player than I was last year. I mean, in all aspects, not just scoring the ball and stuff like that. I wanted to actually take pride on the defensive side. I want to take pride in having to guard the best man on the floor and being able to excel at that. So that's something that I feel like I want to open up a lot of eyes with on that side of the court, just showing that I'm way more than capable of doing that, but showing that I'm fully bought into that, and that's something that I want. When you think of how it would be out, that's what you think of. That's one of the first things you think of. Like, he's going to bring it on the defensive end every night. He's going to make it tough on you. I'm not saying stop everybody, but just make it tough on them. I mean, it's the NBA. You can't stop. If somebody wants to score, it's going to be hard to stop them. Just make it tough on them and just be one of those defensive anchors in the league. I feel like that's one of my goals. That's one of my true inspirations, and that's something that I'm trying to achieve. I mean, whether it's this year or next year, no matter what it is, but it's something that I'm working towards. And I feel like on the other side of the floor, I mean, offensively, just keep getting better. Keep getting better, keep proving those wrong, keep understanding the game, and keep being able to see things before they happen. I feel like that's the biggest thing where I've gotten better at from my rookie year to now, is just understanding the game, understanding when to go, understanding when to not go, understanding who I'm faster than, understanding who to challenge, who not to challenge, and stuff like that. So just keep getting better, keep understanding the game, and just keep playing my role. I feel like it all comes down to playing your role. So whatever this team needs out of me is just something that I got to be able to do for 82 minutes.
Now, you guys are a young team, man. I mean, obviously, you know, yourself, Cade, Marvin Bagley, just drafted Jaden Ivey. Sadiq Bey is one of your young cornerstone guys. Like, you know, I think much has been said in the league about, you know, you need experience.
Of course you have to say Sadiq Bey, DC guy.
Yeah, of course. You okay? I can't leave him out.
Sadiq Bey reminds me a lot of, like, of you, though. He's a worker. But just to touch on DC, he's a worker. He puts in work. And it's just something about those East Coast guys, man. He puts in that work.
Hell yeah, man. As he should, man. Like, you know, obviously you guys are a young group, man. So, like, you know, for you, what's it gonna take for a group of guys who are all in their, you know, 20s? Some of y'all probably ain't even turned 20 yet, you know what I'm saying? But, like, how are you guys gonna be able to compete in a league where it's like a lot of the teams are older teams, or teams like the Warriors just won their fourth championship? Those guys are all 30 plus and been together for X amount of years. You came into the league with OKC, you guys were in the playoff team with PG, who have been through the wars and the battles, Westbrook. Like, you know, how do you guys, who are a bunch of young guys, you know, kind of turn that into wins and try to replicate similar to what, like, a team like Memphis has done, for example, where they got a bunch of young guys, but they're still one of the top teams in the West? Like, how do you think you guys can kind of replicate that and turn that into wins, despite the fact, you know, that you guys are a very young team?
I feel like day in and day out. I mean, I live by the term a penny a day. So that phrase, I mean, you could take it as blunt as you want, or you could dive into it as deep as you want. I mean, a penny a day. I mean, when I dive into it, I think of every single day. What you're trying to do is hard. What we're trying to do is hard. It's not easy. Winning games in this league, night in and night out, is very hard to do. So a penny a day. A penny a day, you get better every day. You lock in on film, you lock in on the court, you lock in on to take care of your body, and you lock in on the mental. And just every day, you stay on that journey. Just every day, just keep doing it. And we just keep stacking good days. And just see where the chips fall. I mean, every night, we're just going to have to fight. Every night, we're going to have to go back against the walls every night, because, like you said, we're the young team in the league. And I feel like you said Memphis, I feel like a big way they did that was just playing faster than everybody. Yeah, we're the youngest team, but I mean, we're the most in shape, we're the fastest team. And we're going to keep you on your heels all night and just see where the chips fall. And I feel like that's something that we've been adapting to a lot this year. I feel like we're playing much faster than last year. And We're getting better. We're starting to understand, I mean, what it takes day in and day out in this league to build a great franchise and build a great team for a long time. So just keep stacking the days and just keep getting better and just keep running our own race. And don't let nobody try to speed up our race. Don't let nobody try to dictate what we got going on. Just keep running our own race and just keep staying in small town Detroit and keep putting in that work.
Sir.
It's definitely clear that you're more than just a basketball guy. You have your foundation and everything that goes into running the foundation. So can you kind of talk to us about how you balance running that, still making sure you're bringing A+ every time you're on the court, and just even maybe some things that went into starting that foundation up for you?
Yeah, so my foundation, I feel like it's a big part of who I am. I just feel like it's something that I always wanted to do, is just being able to touch the youth that is coming up after me. Because I mean, as a kid growing up, I didn't have a lot of pros that I had access to, or like just a lot of successful men that I can talk to or ask for advice or just be around. I didn't have that for me. So for me, it's just something that I want to do for the kids in my community and in any community that me and my foundation is a part of, and families as well. So I feel like my foundation, I started my second year in the league, and it was just something that I felt like it was worth the investment. Just being able to change a family's life, a kid's life, for a day, for years, or whatever it is, that's what dictates who I am as a person, and I feel like that's my legacy, and I feel like that's what's gonna go with me. So I feel like as my foundation, I mean, one of the most things I'm proud about is my trip that I took to Africa 2 years ago. And I donated, so that I'm from a country in Africa called Guinea. And we don't have a lot of like running water. So like running clean water. So sometimes you gotta like walk miles to borrow clean water from like different neighborhoods and stuff that do have the lines and the pipe to get clean water. So I went back home, and in three cities I built running water wells, and just trying to give back each and every day. I had a basketball camp there. I mean, gave back a bunch of food, a bunch of clothes and stuff like that to the community over there. I feel like, because that's where I am, and I got a lot of big things in store for my foundation this summer. Again, I'm trying to go back to Africa and do a lot of different things and just keep touching a lot of different people. And as far as in the city of Detroit and New York, I mean, the cities that I'm connected to the most right now. I feel like I do back to school giveaways, I do hobby days in both cities. I had a great event in Flint this year, Flint, Michigan, went out there, got to see that community, got to see what it's like, had a hobby day, see how to this haircuts and stuff like that for the kids. So I feel like that's just a part of my legacy. I mean, being able to touch all those young kids and being able to see them smile for a day or two, that's better than having a good game for me.
I mean, for me, bro, I just want to say, man, how proud I am of you for that, man, because, you know, we all know Hamidou Diallo, the basketball player, you know what I'm saying? But for me to see you have, you know, the Hamidou Diallo Foundation and to be able to, you know, see the things that you're doing as far as the giveaways and the community service events. I seen you. I went to the bowling alley and you was dancing with the kids, man. I mean, that just brought a lot of joy to my heart, man, just seeing that, you know what I'm saying? Again, just seeing where you came from, bro, and where you started from and where you're at now and being that example. But I just want to let you know that, like, you know, I'm proud of you, and a bunch of people are also proud of you for that, man, you know what I'm saying? So I got to let you know that, you know, while you're sitting here in front of me, man, that's huge, because coming from where we come from, bro, low-income neighborhoods, you know what I'm saying? There, like you said, bro, it's not that many pros that you can actually see with your eyes. I don't remember ever seeing an NBA player with my own two eyes when I was growing up until I went to the Wizards game to watch Gilbert Arenas, and I could only see him from the nosebleed seats, you know what I'm saying? So that's major, bro. I definitely want to give you your flowers for that, bro, you know what I'm saying? On a lighter note, man, we're not gonna hold you for too much longer, man. But we gotta talk about some fashion, you know what I'm saying? I think you're a pretty swaggy guy, you know what I'm saying? And
I'm
one of our favorite segments.
I'm trying to tone it up a little bit.
Okay. I'm gonna toss it to Alexis, man, because one of our favorite segments that we have on this new podcast is called Match or Mismatch. And it gives us the opportunity to talk about some fashion trends. You know what I'm saying? New York's pretty fly. Not as fly as DC, but y'all pretty fly. So I'm gonna go ahead and let Alexis get us into to Match or Mismatch, man. And we go see, you know what I'm saying, what's your fashion bag talking about.
Yeah, let's do it.
So Queens, you guys have like a lot of interesting things. Some stuff, some trends, like I don't know. So were there any trends like that you kind of saw in Queens as you were growing up that you were like, I can't really get with that one?
I feel like I did every trend in New York. I have to. I'm a New Yorker, so it's like, how can I embrace being a New Yorker and not be on every trend that New York has started? Like, I did the Tims, I did the baggy jeans, I did the skinny jeans, I did the vest, I did the one jeans, suit, jumpers. I mean, I had to do everything. I still do the white AF1s, probably got like 10 pairs. Just always gotta have a fresh pair of white ups. That's the East Coast thing. I'm pretty sure y'all do that too, right? All right.
It depends.
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like right now, like a trend from New York that I'm kind of off of, I would say, is like the Tims. I'm kind of done with the Tims. I'm putting those up. And I mean, since y'all call it match or mismatch, I mean, I feel like anybody that's matching from head to toe, that is not fashion.
Facts.
Not fashion. Matching from head to toe is not fashion. And we started to call, like, me and my boys, like, we be starting to call, like, a lot of people, like, the mannequin challenge. Because a lot of people are just dressing like mannequins. Like, I don't want to see you in designer from head to toe. That's not fashion to me.
So it's facts.
Like, you gotta have some swagger. Everybody got their own little sauce to it. But matching and mannequins, we ain't doing that.
Okay, so can you kind of talk to us about maybe one of your most recent outfits that you're like, okay, one, I really have it on, and like what you did. So like, as far as like, so let's say it's a shirt, pant, and shoe combo. So what did you do to cop the hat? Did you get the shoe through a sneaky plug? Just like, so basically your favorite outfit and kind of what you went through to cop the outfit, basically.
I feel like most of my favorite outfits be like simple. Like, just simple, like, good pieces that were, like, when you see it, you'd be like, what's that? Like, what you got on? And then when I say it, like, nobody really knows. But I go with my, the last time I really, really dressed up was probably, like, on my birthday. Like, July. So, I'm going to go with birthday fit. I think I had on, like, a little vest, good little black. I was wearing all black, just, like, all black Tom Settle, some shades on, a couple of chains, accessories, and stuff like that. But I feel like most of my fits is just simple. Like, I had on, like, some Fear of God, Fear of God boots. I had on a Givenchy suit. It was, like, with a vest. And I just had on, like, a simple, like, $20 black T-shirt. So it was, like, I had on a hat, and I just put on some shades. And I feel like I feel like my best fits be, like, my simplest fits. But I feel like I had a phase, though, when I went through, like, I was just buying so much designer. I just went designer. And it's like, that ain't fashion. I just had to go through it to see that ain't it. I feel like my best fits now is like when I mismatch. Like, I got designer this, but my shirt might be $10. You feel me? My pants really might be $30, but my top might be a couple hundred. Or my jacket is a couple thousand. And everything else is like a couple hundred. You feel me? So it's like, right. Just mixing and matching. I don't want to be walking around in sometimes, of course, in my whole fit is like Louis hat, Louis glasses, Louis shirt, Louis jacket. It's like, that ain't really my speed no more. But I'll have some dope accessories. But I've mostly been on like underground brands. I've been trying to find like a bunch of like underground brands, underground like dope designers, and just trying to like rock their stuff, get their stuff out there, get their stuff promoted, and mostly black owned too. I mean, like, my girl had me in the fashion too, so like she be putting me on the game too. Like, she real heavy in the fashion. So a lot of people say I get it from her, but you know, I got a little bit of swag in me.
way to plug the wifey, man, because that's gonna get you some points. You know what I'm saying? You a smart man.
So last question for you. So, you know, being in the NBA, you basically have so many clothes and shoes accessible to you. If you need a pair of shoes, you're not waiting in line. You know, you don't really have to do too
much. That's not true, though. That's not true.
Really?
That's not true for me.
Correct us, please.
Everybody has different plugs. Like, in the league, everybody has different people. Like, yeah, of course, I got some plugs where I can back door and get the kicks that I really want to get, but I got to pay more, of course. I still got like one or two plugs where I can get some retail stuff from, though. Like, I pay retail for like one or two stuff. But most of the stuff is like, either I'm paying more for it or I'm like getting it from my homeboys. Like, a couple of my homeboys are doing sneaker flips and stuff. But I still got a couple of plugs where I can hit them up on the side and they'll make me bypass the little raffle and stuff like that. I can't throw them out there, but I got a couple. But most of the time, like, most of my stuff is like, I either buy for a little more.
So do you mostly start?
It's like they getting it. I mean, some stuff too I get for free. Most of my stuff I get for free too. Like, I got a lot of like great stuff for free. Like, that I wear every day, like, I got it for free. So I feel like that's one of the perks too, that a lot of brands and stuff, they want you to be wearing their stuff, so they'll just give it to you for free.
So if you had to give us, top three NBA players as far as style, fashion, putting it all together, who's in your top three?
And I can't say myself, right?
No, you can't say yourself.
So of course I'm gonna go with Shay. I mean, I played with him, and like Shay, he dedicated to that drip. That's one thing. One thing about him, he gonna make sure he put that on every day. He don't got no slack days. Like, see, me, I'm a person, like, I can wake up and I can have an outfit picked, and if I ain't really, like, in the mold, like, I'm just wearing a sweatsuit. And I don't see Shay doing that. He gonna put it on every day. Another person I'm gonna go with is my boy Jared Vanderbilt. He played for Utah. He be putting it on, too. He was my teammate, too. So, yeah, just a bunch of my teammates. And my third one, I'm gonna go with Russ. It's all my teammates.
I respect you.
For sure. There's some sneaky people out there that be getting hit to the drip.
I respect it, man.
I know you're not dripping, Drew.
Yeah, all right. Hey, listen, bro. I'm out here in Japan. You know what I'm saying? I got the overseas drip. I ain't even seen the drip over here in the league. I got the exclusive drip you cannot get in the States.
His high school days, he been trying to drip. Him and I can't wait.
Hey, bro, I'm a stepper, bro.
I can't wait to see Aaron in LA.
Hey, look, Ace don't put it on like me, bro. I really put that shit on. You know what I'm saying?
You put it on better than Ace. You put it on better than Ace.
Hey, bro, listen, bro. Next time you see me, you're going to be like, damn, bro, where you get that? I'm like, hey, look, you can't get this, bro. I know you went in the league, but you cannot get this. It's just that Japanese imported.
I'm going to hold you to that. You said what? Reunion too. When we doing the reunion, we got to do a reunion this summer.
2023, man, summer is coming. Reunion.
Do that weekend real quick. We could do CT, then we could go to like Boston or something close. Like, we got to put that together, though.
Look, we're doing that this summer, bro. Clear schedule right now. We're going to do a weekend in 2023.
I was there this summer. I was in Putnam this summer.
Okay, all right, look. The whole time the Hall of Fame ceremony, we was on here. What happened? You was out LA. You was out Cali. You know,
I'm gonna talk to you about that on the back end.
Man. So look, last question I got for you, man. I throw this from all the smoke. I gotta give them they plug, man. So we need your recommendation, man, for one person we should have on the pod next. And whoever you say, you gotta help us get them on the pod.
So who you did so far? I seen you did Quinn, right?
Yeah, Quinn Cook was our first episode. Second episode was Stanton Kidd and dropped yet. So, you know what I'm saying? Second episode was Stanton Kidd, though. He played for the Jazz with Mie and the boys a couple years back. But now he's out here in Japan with me. He play EuroLeague and all that kind of stuff. And you episode three. You know what I'm saying? So like, jumping along, we got three bangers. We got three bangers off the gate.
I feel like, I mean, I really want to see. You just named three men, right?
You said what?
You just named three men, right?
Yep, three men.
Women get up here. I mean, I want to just see. I mean, it could be anybody. I mean, I don't got nobody on top of my head, but I want to see somebody influential get up here. I mean, and they don't have nothing to do with sports. I mean, they could just be talking about life in general, or whether if it's talking about.
You got to give us a name, because whoever you name, you got to help us get them on. You got any, matter of fact, we're trying to get some photographers. If you know any photographers that's doing some great stuff, if you know any investors, any fashion people that's big in the NBA, best styling people fits or whatever it may be, somebody who think will give us some good gems, man.
I got a stylist for you. Not a stylist, but he's a fashion designer. His brand is called Sabon. He's originally from Detroit, but his brand based out of Los Angeles is called Sabon. In French, that means I'm good. I would love to have him come up here. I mean, help him get him up here. Let him talk about his journey in the fashion industry. Let him talk about, I mean, what he's working on. Who he has worked with. I mean, he's worked with some of the best in the game, and just talk a little bit about fashion. I mean, I could put that together for his name, Mamadou too. So,
Mamadou. All right. So yeah, that's you're saying that close. Look, so Bet, man. Listen, like I said, man, I'm meant to put that shit on himself. So for me. I would love to have a fashion designer on here, man. So say boom, we're going after the interview, I'm gonna go ahead and text you. And if you can, you know what I'm saying, make a group chat, whatever it may be, we can go ahead and try to set that up, you know what I'm saying? But man, this has been a lot of fun, bro. And like I said, man, I definitely want to just thank you for coming on, man. It's been great catching up with you, you know what I'm saying? Reminiscing, you know what I'm saying, on them old Putnam days. Like I said, the documentary. It's still too much. We can't even tell y'all on this. It's still too much because we can't even disclose on this podcast right now that y'all have to learn about later.
I got a lot of hours of film that I'm sitting on too right now. A lot. So we don't
say less.
We don't put it together. But like I said, bro, I appreciate you, man. Keep doing what you're doing, man. Keep working. Anything y'all need from me, you know I'm always here, bro. Always accessible. Always trying to
for sure.
Always trying to figure it out. It's all love.
No doubt, my boy. All love, always, man. Like I said, man, we're going to be tuned in this season with the trick, you know what I'm saying? Getting that back rolling, you know what I'm saying? We know y'all, like I said, Troy Weaver at the top, you know what I'm saying? So I'm automatically a Pistons fan because it's DMV. It's DMV brand. Now my boy on the team too, so you feel me? Y'all like my second team now pretty much, you know what I'm saying? I got no choice, man. So we're going to be tapped in with you, man. Before we get off, man, I got to mention this too because Scrab and Espo, we'll be mad if we ain't, you know what I'm saying, get him a shout out as well, man. Those guys are, you know, responsible for not only, you know, myself, you, Ace, Mamadou, all of us, man. Like, I got to give a shout out to those guys, everybody at Putnam Science Academy, man. And I wish we could have linked up at the Hall of Fame ceremony because that was certainly a special moment for myself.
Figure it out. You know, we don't figure it out. Please love and Putnam. That town got more memories than any town in the world for us. I mean, that's where we really became men. So we always gonna be able to step over there and call that place home. So sure. I can't wait to go back in the gym and play some ones though. So let's do it. Let's set it up.
For sure. Cause you know I want smoke, just like how me and Ace used to cook you and Keelan and them twos back in the day, you know. Yeah. I know you remember that. Another episode of What's in Your Bag featuring Hamadou Diallo, man. This has been a wonderful episode, guys. Make sure you're liking this podcast, subscribing to this podcast, telling a friend to tell a friend. It goes a long way. And until next time, folks, we'll catch you on the next one. Peace. Yes,
thanks for listening to another episode of the What's in Your Bag podcast with Andrew Robinson, presented by Bet Online. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe to this podcast, and tell a friend to tell a friend, whether you're watching this on YouTube or listening to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, Bet Online remains your number one source for all football betting needs this season.